Polypel Island is a small knot of land 50 miles north of Manhattan. On it sits an abandoned castle ruin built at the turn of the 20th century. Constellation is a large-scale sculptural work installed over this ruin in the Hudson Highlands State Park. Every evening, as the sun goes down, starry lights emerge one by one with the stars of the night sky, creating a new constellation and connecting past and present. There are 17 points in constellation. Each point of light is a solar-powered LED inside a hand-blown glass globe installed on the top of a tapered aluminum pole. These stars appear to float magically in the night sky. The bottom portion of each pole has been painted to blend in with the ruin, and the color fades as the pole extends beyond the structure, creating a rhythmic drawing in space and drawing the eye upward, referring to the missing portion of the castle. Constellation can be seen from many vantage points, including the commuter trains, boats plying the Hudson, hiking trails, and roads on both sides of the river.
This is Sam Anderson. Notes on an island. What is this island? There are too many ways to answer the question. It is a knot of land 1,000 feet offshore that holds compressed the entire history of the Hudson River. Beauty, revolution, industry, decay. It is a mystery. We don't even know exactly what to call it. Polypel, polypus, polypus, polypels, polypens, peptlepel. We don't know whether it was named after a cactus or a lovesick girl or an obsolete piece of sailing equipment. We do know that it has a history, but we don't know most of that history. We know that it was carved out in an ice age by the glacier that gouged out the Hudson Fjord. The island was an accident of rock left in the middle of the trough. Then we know nothing for something like 20,000 years.
What are these stars? This is Hadrian Cummins of the Lenape Center.
Constellation references the White Road, the Milky Way, also known as Hopi Tamakan. In Lenape, this is a path that one travels between this world and the spirit world. It is one of the first projects in the area to honor and celebrate the indigenous perspective. And in doing so, it tells of a more complete history of the Hudson Valley.
This is Tracy K. Smith. From My God, It's Full of Stars. Perhaps the great error is believing we're alone, that the others have come and gone, a momentary blip. When all along, space might be chock full of traffic, bursting at the seams with energy we neither feel nor see, flush against us, living, dying, deciding, setting solid feet down on planets everywhere, bowing to the great stars that command, pitching stones at whatever are their moons. They live wondering if they are the only ones, knowing only the wish to know, and the great black distance they, we, flicker in. Maybe the dead know, their eyes widening at last, seeing the high beams of a million galaxies flick on at twilight, hearing the engines flare, the horns not letting up, the frenzy of being. I want it to be one notch below bedlam, like a radio without a dial, wide open so everything floods in at once, and sealed tight so nothing escapes, not even time, which should curl in on itself and loop around like smoke, so that I might be sitting now beside my father as he raises a lit match to the bowl of his pipe for the first time in the winter of 1959.
To go into solitude, a man needs to retire as much from his chamber as from society. I am not solitary whilst I read and write, though nobody is with me. But if a man would be alone, let him look at the stars. The rays that come from those heavenly worlds will separate between him and what he touches. One might think the atmosphere was made transparent with this design, to give man, in the heavenly bodies, the perpetual presence of the sublime. Seen in the streets of cities, how great they are! If the stars should appear one night in 1,000 years, how would men believe and adore and preserve for many generations the remembrance of the city of God which had been shown? But every night come out these envoys of beauty and light the universe with their admonishing smile. The stars awaken a certain reverence because, though always present, they are inaccessible. But all natural objects make a kindred impression when the mind is open to their influence. Ralph Waldo Emerson, Nature, 1849.
The artist, Melissa McGill.
We moved up here about 7 years ago from Brooklyn, and seeing the island from the train, I always wondered about what the story was behind this place with the castle ruin, and, you know, it seemed unusual to have an island in the middle of the Hudson River like this. So I wondered about what its history was. And I also noticed that many of my neighbors and people in the community had not been there. And there were a lot of stories about it, but really people didn't have a direct relationship to this place. So I started thinking about, well, what other histories are involved with this place? What other stories, and what came before the castle? And as I've always been interested in my work about the relationship of absence and presence, and what's there versus what's not there, and the dialogue between a memory of a place and what's actually in front of you, I started to explore more histories and read more about it, and became interested in proposing a project that addressed these questions. I started to think about the history of the castle and what it originally looked like. And I did a drawing of two photographs superimposed. One of the castle as it is now, the ruin, versus the one, or castle that originally was. And in superimposing those, I started to mark off points that connected what's there now with its history of its structure. And I started thinking about this as a constellation of points. But then I really became interested in the constellation becoming a path to more exploration of the place. So, yes, it refers to the original structure of what once was, but then it goes off from there and becomes reconnected to the landscape through this constellation. The site becomes reconnected to the landscape through the series of points, reconnected to the sky, reconnected to reflection in the water, and just more tied in to this majestic landscape, the fjord, the Hudson Highlands fjord.
The island is scenery from a train. Something in America that looks like it's from Europe. People crane to look out the window. The castle, the castle! They tell each other what it is and why it's there. And almost all of the explanations are obviously fake. Train mythology. In the 1600s, Dutch sailors thought of the island as a threshold between good and evil. North was peace, south was danger. The river below the island is deep, narrow, twisted, and bordered by mountains that funnel the wind, the Hudson Highlands. Above the island, it is wide, calm, and easy. Dutch sailors said that a goblin lived in the highlands, the Heer of Dunderberg. He brought storms and ruined ships. During bad storms, living sailors could hear the voices of the dead, ghost captains calling out useless orders. These legends went on for a long time. First-time sailors of the Hudson River Gorge were dipped ceremonially in the water next to the island to inoculate them against the Heer. In Moby Dick, there's a passage about how Captain Ahab sometimes seemed less crazy. In these cases, however, the narrator tells us, he has not become less crazy. His craziness has only deepened and narrowed, like the Hudson River does in the Highlands. Even then, Melville writes, Ahab, in his hidden self, raved on. Human madness is oftentimes a cunning and most feline thing. When you think it fled, it may have become transfigured into still subtler form. Ahab's full lunacy subsided not, but deepeningly contracted, like the unabated Hudson, when that noble Northman flows narrowly but unfathomably through the Highland Gorge. Francis Bannerman VI, the man who built the castle, has a perfect origin story. He was born in Scotland, but moved to America at age 3 in 1854. His father supported the family by selling surplus material he scavenged from the Brooklyn Navy Yard. But then his father went off to fight in the Civil War. Little Francis was forced to leave school to support the family. He turned out to be such a talented and obsessive scavenger of junk that he and his father, after the war, were able to pioneer a new way to make money off of war, the Army-Navy Surplus Store. They opened a shop in New York City that became, according to the historian Tom Johnson, a mecca for collectors. Their catalogs were at first handwritten, then short printed pamphlets, then 300-page encyclopedias of the history of weapons and war. They sold the weapons surrendered by Sitting Bull after the Custer massacre. They sold rubber sandals left over from an Arctic expedition. In 1898, Bannerman bought all the leftovers from the Spanish-American War. This created a storage crisis. You couldn't keep a mountain of black powder in the middle of a busy city, so Francis Bannerman bought a small island in the middle of the Hudson River. He started fantasizing about castles. He sketched his fantastical castles on the backs of envelopes and hotel stationery. He invented a family crest, a grappling hook, a Scottish war banner, a bomb. He built his castle out of scraps of metal and blasted rock and bricks and concrete. Ocean buoys were used as decorative balls along its top. There was a working drawbridge. There were cannons all over the island, some from the Civil War. Theater companies and military men would sail up the river to buy his stock. He had a fantasy that, if he taught people enough about the history of war, war would no longer be necessary. The castle was an optical illusion. Its corners were designed to make it look bigger than it actually was. Its upper floors were used for keeping chickens and playing tennis. Francis Bannerman VI died in 1918. 2 weeks after the end of World War I, the castle exploded in 1920.
My name is Tom Johnson. I am a lifetime resident of the Hudson Valley, and I have been interested and fascinated with the ruins of Bannerman's Island Arsenal for over 45 years. I first came out to the island, about 38 years ago. In a little wooden dink, a little wooden rowboat. The oddities, in a sense, that have been found within the architecture and the arsenal are all of the recycled materials that Frank Bannerman used to build it. So there's gun barrels, ramrod bayonets that he used instead of reinforcement bar or rebar. There's bed frames. There's these things that we think were target frames. He was reusing a lot of material. If he couldn't resell it, he came up with a way to reuse it in a very creative way. In fact, he didn't have to make the architecture as curious as he did. He could have just made a box. One of the other interesting, fascinating things to me about the architecture is there's almost not a right angle on any of the buildings. And I believe he did that to create the optical illusion of false perspective. And it works. It makes it look larger than it actually is. And if you're looking at it from some viewpoints, it's spectacular how well it worked. And then if you look at it from certain viewpoints, you can actually tell there's something odd going on with regard to the relationships of the buildings. And he made something that is evocative, that makes us ask questions. You know, what is it? Which was the first question I asked when I first saw it. What is it? And the second one is, why is it there? So he did something that forces me, and I think many people, to ask really good questions.
For more information or to support Constellation, please go to the support page of the Melissa McGill Constellation website, melissamcgillconstellation.com. The artist would like to thank, in order of appearance, Sam Anderson, Hadrian Cummins, Tracy K. Smith, and Tom Johnson. Music composed by Chris Zaitza. Recorded at Spire Studios and on location by Tommy Herron. Mixed and mastered by Tommy Herron. Produced and directed by Maya Thomas.